thing to do. Leaving my axe and lantern, I ran for home. Picking up a long-handled shovel, I hurried back. The sun was high in the sky before I had dug old Dan out. He was a sight to see, nothing but mud from the tip of his nose to the end of his tail. I held on to his collar and led him down to the river to wash him off. The water there was much warmer than the cold spring water of the slough. After washing him, I turned him loose. Right back to the hole he ran. Little Ann was already digging. I knew the coon was still there. Working together, we dug him out. After the coon was killed, I saw what had made him so smart. His right front foot was twisted and shriveled. At one time, he must have been caught in a trap and had pulled himself free. He was an old coon. His face was almost white. He was big and heavy and had beautiful fur. Tired, muddy, wet, and hungry, I started for home. I've often wondered how old Dan got into that old muskrat den. Perhaps there was another entrance I had overlooked. I'll never know. One night, far back in the mountains, in a place called the Cyclone Timber, old Dan really pulled a good one. Many years before my time, a terrible cyclone had ripped its way through the mountains, leaving its scar in the form of fallen timber, twisted and snarled. The path of the cyclone was several miles wide and several miles long. It was a wonderful place to hunt, as it abounded with game. My dogs had struck the trail of a coon about an hour before. They had really been warming him up. I knew it was about time for him to take up a tree, and sure enough, I heard the deep voice of old Dan telling the world he had a coon up a tree. I was trotting along, going to them, when his voice stopped. I could hear little Ann, but not old Dan. I wondered why, and was a little scared, for I just knew something had happened. Then I heard his voice. It seemed louder than it had been before. I felt much better. When I came up to the tree, I thought little Ann had treed old Dan. She was sitting on her haunches, staring up and bawling the tree bark. There, a good 15 feet from the ground, with his hind legs planted firmly in the center of a big limb and his front feet against the trunk of the tree, stood old Dan, bawling for all he was worth. Above him, some 8 or 9 feet, was a baby coon. I was glad it was a young one, for if it had been an old one, he would have jumped out. Old Dan would have followed, and he surely would have broken all of his legs. From where I was standing, I could see it was impossible for old Dan to have climbed the tree. It was dead and more of an old snag than a tree, with limbs that were crooked and twisted. The bark had rotted away and fallen off, leaving the trunk bare and slick as glass. It was a good 10 feet up to the first limb. I couldn't figure out how old Dan had climbed that tree. There had to be a solution somewhere. Walking around to the other side, I saw how he had accomplished his feat. There in the bottom was a large hole. The old tree was hollow. Stepping back, I looked up and could see another hole which had been hidden from me because of old Dan's body. He had simply crawled into the hole at the bottom, climbed up the hollow of the tree, and worked his way out on the limb. In some way, he had turned around and reared up, placing his front feet against the trunk. There he was. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't cut the tree down, and I was afraid to climb it for fear I would scare the coon into jumping out. If he did, old Dan would jump too and break his legs. I ran plan after plan around in my mind. None would work. I finally came to the conclusion that I had to climb the tree and get a hold of that crazy dog. I blew out my lantern, pulled off my shoes and socks, and started shimmying up the tree. I prayed that the coon wouldn't jump out. Inching along, being as quiet as I could, I made it up to old Dan and grabbed his collar. I sat down on the limb and held him tight. He would bawl now and then and all but burst my eardrums. I couldn't drop him to the ground, and I couldn't climb down with him. I couldn't sit there on that limb and hold him all night. I would be no better off when daylight came. Glancing at the hole by my side gave me the solution to my problem. I thought, if he came out of this hole, he can go back in it. That was the way I got my dog down from the tree. This had its problems, too. In the first place, old Dan didn't want to be put in the hole head first. By scolding, pushing, shoving, and squeezing, I finally got him started on his way. Like a fool, I sat there on the limb, waiting to see him come out at the bottom, and come out he did. Turning around, bawling as he did, right back in the hole he went. There was nothing I could do but sit and wait. I understood why his voice had stopped for a while. He just took time out to climb a tree. Putting my ear to the hole, I could hear him coming, grunting and clawing. Up he came. I helped him out of the hole, turned him around, and crammed him back in. That time I wasn't too gentle with my work. I was tired of sitting on the limb, and my bare feet were getting cold. I started down the same time he did. He beat me down. Looking over my shoulder, I saw him turn around and head back for the hole. I wasn't far from the ground, so I let go. The flint rocks didn't feel too good to my feet when I landed. I jumped to the hole just in time to see the tip end of his long tail disappearing. I grabbed it. Holding on with one hand, I worked his legs down with my other and pulled him out. I stopped his tree climbing by cramming rocks and chunks into the hole. How the coon stayed in the tree, I'll never know, but stay he did. With a well-aimed rock, I scared him out. Old Dan satisfied his lust to kill. I started for home. I'd had all the hunting I wanted for that night. I had often wondered what old Dan would do if little Ann got into some kind of a predicament. One night, I got my answer. For several days, a northern blizzard had been blowing. It was a bad one. The temperature dropped down to 10 below. The storm started with a slow, cold drizzle, and then sleet. When the wind started blowing, everything froze, leaving the ground as slick as glass. Trapped indoors, I was as nervous as a fish out of water. I told Mama I guessed it was just going to storm all winter. She laughed and said, "I don't think it will, but it does look like it will last for a while." She ruffled up my hair and kissed me between the eyes. This did rile me up. I didn't like to be kissed like that. It seemed that I could practically rub my skin off and still feel it all wet and sticky and kind of burning. Sometime on the fifth night, the storm blew itself out, and it snowed about 3 inches. The next morning, I went out to my doghouse. Scraping the snow away from the two-way door, I stuck my head in. It was as warm as an oven. I got my face washed all over by little Ann. Old Dan's tail thumped out a tune on the wall. I told him to be ready because we were going hunting that night. I knew the old ringtails would be hungry and stirring, for they had been denned up during the storm. That evening, as I was leaving the house, Papa said, "Billy, be careful tonight. It's slick down under the snow, and it would be easy to twist an ankle or break a leg." I told him I would, and that I wasn't going far, just down back of our fields in the bottoms. "Well, anyway," he said, "be careful. There'll be no moon tonight, and you're going to see some fog next to the river." Walking through our fields, I saw my father was right about it being slick and dark. Several times I slipped and sat down. I couldn't see anything beyond the glow of my lantern, but I wasn't worried. My light was a good one, and Mama had insisted that I make 2 little leather pouches to cover the blades of my axe. Just before I reached the timber, old Dan shook the snow from the underbrush with his deep voice. I stopped and listened. He bawled again. The deep bass tones rolled around under the tall sycamores, tore their way out of the thick timber, traveled out over the fields, and slammed up against the foothills. There they seemed to break up and die away in the mountains. Old Dan was working the trail slowly, and I knew why. He would never line out until little Ann was running by his side. I thought she would never get there. When she did, her beautiful voice made the blood pound in my temples. I felt the excitement of the hunt as it ate its way into my body. Taking a deep breath, I reared back and whooped as loud as I could. The coon ran up river for a way, and then, cutting out of the bottoms, he headed for the mountains. I stood and listened until their voices went out of hearing. Slipping and sliding, I started in the direction I had last heard them. About halfway to the foothills, I heard them coming back. Somewhere in the rugged mountains, the coon had turned and headed toward the river. It was about time for him to play out a few tricks, and I was wondering what he would do. I knew it would be hard for him to hide his trail with snow on the ground, and I realized later that the smart old coon knew this too. As the voices of my dogs grew louder, I could tell that they were coming straight toward me. Once I started to blow out my lantern, thinking that maybe I could see them when they crossed our field, but I realized I didn't stand a chance of seeing the race in the skunk black night. Down out of the mountains they brought him, singing a hound dog song on his heels. The coon must have scented me or seen my lantern. He cut to my right and ran between our house and me. I heard screaming and yelling from my sisters. My father started whooping. I knew my whole family was out on the porch listening to the beautiful voices of my little red hounds. I felt as tall as the tallest sycamore on the riverbank. I yelled as loud as I could. Again I heard the squealing of my sisters and the shouts of my father. The deep of old Dan and the sharp of little Anne bored a hole in the inky black night. The vibrations rolled and quivered in the icy silence. The coon was heading for the river. I could tell my dogs were crowding him and wondered if he'd make it to the water. I was hoping he wouldn't, for I didn't want to wade the cold water unless I had to do it. I figured the smart old coon had a reason for turning and coming back to the river and wondered what trick he had in mind. I remembered something my grandfather had told me. He said, "Never underestimate the cunning of an old river coon. When the nights are dark and the ground is frozen and slick, they can pull some mean tricks on a hound. Sometimes the tricks can be fatal." I was halfway through the fog-covered bottoms when the voices of my dogs stopped. I stood still, waited, and listened. A cold silence settled over the bottoms. I could hear the snap and crack of sap-frozen limbs. From far back in the flinty hills, the long, lonesome howl of a timber wolf floated down in the silent night. Across the river, I heard a cow moo. I knew the sound was coming from the Lowry place. Not being able to hear the voices of my dogs gave me an uncomfortable feeling. I whooped and waited for one of them to bawl. As I stood waiting, I realized something was different in the bottoms. Something was missing. I wasn't worried about my dogs. I figured that the coon had pulled some trick, and sooner or later they would unravel the trail. But the feeling that something was just not right had me worried. I whooped several times, but still could get no answer. Stumbling, slipping, and sliding, I started on. Reaching the river, I saw it was frozen over. I realized what my strange, uneasy feeling was. I had not been able to hear the sound of the water. As I stood, listening, I heard a gurgling out in the middle of the stream. The river wasn't frozen all the way across. The still, eddy waters next to the banks had frozen, but out in the middle, where the current was swift, the water was running, leaving a trough in the ice pack. The gurgling sound I had heard was the swift current as it sucked its way through the channel. The last time I had heard my dogs, they were downstream from me. I walked on, listening. I hadn't gone far when I heard old Dan. What I heard froze the blood in my veins. He wasn't bawling on a trail or giving the tree bark. It was one long, continuous cry. In his deep voice, there seemed to be a pleading cry for help. Scared, worried, and with my heart beating like a churn dasher, I started toward the sound. I almost passed him, but with another cry, he let me know where he was. He was out on the ice pack. I couldn't see him for the fog. I called to him, and he answered with a low whine. Again I called his name. This time he came to me. He wasn't the same dog. His tail was between his legs, and his head was bowed down. He stopped about 7 feet from me. Sitting down on the ice, he raised his head and howled the most mournful cry I had ever heard. Turning around, he trotted back out on the ice and disappeared in the fog. I knew something had happened to little Anne. I called her name. She answered with a pleading cry. Although I couldn't see her, I guessed what had happened. The coon had led them to the river. Running out on the ice, he had leaped across the trough. My dogs, hot on the trail, had followed. Old Dan, a more powerful dog than little Anne, had made his leap. Little Anne had not made it. Her small feet had probably slipped on the slick ice, and she had fallen into the icy waters. Old Dan, seeing the fate of his little friend, had quit the chase and come back to help her. The smart old coon had pulled his trick, and a deadly one it was. I had to do something. She would never be able to get out by herself. It was only a matter of time until her body would be paralyzed by the freezing water. Laying my axe down, I held my lantern out in front of me and stepped out on the ice. It started cracking and popping. I jumped back to the bank. Although it was thick enough to hold the light weight of my dogs, it would never hold me. Little Anne started whining and begging for help. I went all to pieces and started crying. Something had to be done, and done quickly, or my little dog was lost. I thought of running home for a rope or for my father, but I knew she couldn't last until I got back. I was desperate. It was impossible for me to swim in the freezing water. I wouldn't last for a minute. She cried again, begging for the one thing I couldn't give her, help. I thought, if only I could see her, maybe I could figure out some way I could help. Looking at my lantern gave me an idea. I ran up the bank about 30 feet, turned and looked back. I could see the light, not well, but enough for what I had in mind. I grabbed my lantern and axe and ran for the bottoms. I was looking for a stand of wild cane. After what seemed like ages, I found it. With the longest one I could find, I hurried back. After it was trimmed and the limber end cut off, I hung the lantern by the handle on the end of it and started easing it out on the ice. I saw old Dan first. He was sitting close to the edge of the trough, looking down. Then I saw her. I groaned at her plight. All I could see was her head and her small front paws. Her claws were spread out and digging into the ice. She knew if she ever lost that hold, she was gone. Old Dan raised his head and howled. Hound though he was, he knew it was the end of the trail for his little pal. I wanted to get my light as close to little Ann as I could, but my pole was a good 8 feet short. Setting the lantern down, I eased the pole from under the handle. I thought, I'm no better off than I was before. In fact, I'm worse off. Now I can see when the end comes. Little Ann cried again. I saw her claws slip on the ice. Her body settled lower in the water. Old Dan howled and started fidgeting. He knew the end was close. I didn't exactly know when I started out toward my dog. I had taken only 2 steps when the ice broke. I twisted my body and fell toward the bank. Just as my hand closed on a root, I thought my feet touched bottom, but I wasn't sure. As I pulled myself out, I felt the numbing cold creep over my legs. It looked so hopeless. There didn't seem to be any way I could save her. At the edge of the water stood a large sycamore. I got behind it, anything to blot out that heartbreaking scene. Little Ann, thinking I had deserted her, started crying. I couldn't stand it. I opened my mouth to call old Dan. I wanted to tell him to come on and we'd go home, as there was nothing we could do. The words just wouldn't come out. I couldn't utter a sound. I lay my face against the icy, cold bark of the sycamore. I thought of the prayer I had said when I had asked God to help me get 2 hound pups. I knelt down and sobbed out a prayer. I asked for a miracle which would save the life of my little dog. I promised all the things that a young boy could, if only he would help me. Still saying my prayer and making promises, I heard a sharp metallic sound. I jumped up and stepped away from the tree. I was sure the noise I had heard was made by a rattling chain on the front end of a boat. I shouted as loud as I could, "Over here! I need help! My dog is drowning!" I waited for an answer. All I could hear were the cries of little Ann. Again I hollered, "Over here! Over on the bank! Can you see my light? I need help! Please, hurry!" I held my breath waiting for an answering shout. I shivered from the freezing cold of my wet shoes and overalls. A straining silence settled over the river. A feathery rustle swished by in the blackness. A flock of low-flying ducks had been disturbed by my loud shouts. I strained my ears for some sound. Now and then I could hear the lapping slap of the ice-cold water as it swirled its way through the trough. I glanced to little Ann. She was still holding on, but I saw her paws were almost at the edge. I knew her time was short. I couldn't figure out what I had heard. The sound was made by metal, striking metal, but what was it? What could have caused it? I looked at my axe. It couldn't have made the sound, as it was too close to me. The noise had come from out in the river. When I looked at my lantern, I knew that it had made the strange sound. I had left the handle standing straight up when I had taken the pole away. Now it was down. For some unknown reason, the stiff wire handle had twisted in the sockets and dropped. As it had fallen, it had struck the metal frame, making the sharp metallic sound I had heard. As I stared at the yellow glow of my light, the last bit of hope faded away. I closed my eyes, intending to pray again for the help I so desperately needed. Then, like a blinding red flash, the message of the lantern bored its way into my brain. There was my miracle. There was the way to save my little dog. In the metallic sound I had heard were my instructions. They were so plain I couldn't help but understand them. The bright yellow flame started flickering and dancing. It seemed to be saying, "Hurry! You know what to do!" Faster than I had ever moved in my life, I went to work. With a stick, I measured the water in the hole where my feet had broken through the ice. I was right, my foot had touched bottom. 18 inches down, I felt the soft mud. With my pole, I fished the lantern back to the bank. I took the handle off, straightened it out, and bent a hook in one end. With one of my shoelaces, I tied the wire to the end of the cane pole. I left the hook sticking out about 6 inches beyond the end of it. I started shouting encouragement to little Anne. I told her to hang on and not to give up, for I was going to save her. She answered with a low cry. With the hook stuck in one of the ventilating holes in the top of my light, I lifted it back out on the ice and set it down. After a little wiggling and pushing, I worked the hook loose and laid the pole down. I took off my clothes, picked up my axe, and stepped down into the hole in the icy water. It came to my knees. Step by step, breaking the ice with my axe, I waded out. The water came up to my hips, and then to my waist. The cold bite of it took my breath away. I felt my body grow numb. I couldn't feel my feet at all, but I knew they were moving. When the water reached my armpits, I stopped and worked my pole toward little Anne. Stretching my arms as far out as I could, I saw I was still a foot short. Closing my eyes and gritting my teeth, I moved on. The water reached my chin. I was close enough. I started hooking at the collar of little Anne. Time after time, I felt the hook almost catch. I saw I was fishing on a wrong angle. She had settled so low in the water I couldn't reach her collar. And raising my arms above my head so the pole would be on a slant, I kept hooking and praying. The seconds ticked by. I strained for one more inch. The muscles in my arms grew numb from the weight of the pole. Little Anne's claws slipped again. I thought she was gone. At the very edge of the ice, she caught again. All I could see now were her small red paws and her nose and eyes. By old Dan's actions, I could tell he understood and wanted to help. He ran over close to my pole and started digging at the ice. I whopped him with the cane. That was the only time in my life I ever hit my dog. I had to get him out of the way so I could see what I was doing. Just when I thought my task was impossible, I felt the hook slide under the tough leather. It was none too soon. As gently as I could, I dragged her over the rim of the ice. At first I thought she was dead. She didn't move. Old Dan started whining and licking her face and ears. She moved her head. I started talking to her. She made an effort to stand, but couldn't. Her muscles were paralyzed, and the blood had long since ceased to flow. At the movement of little Anne, old Dan threw a fit. He started barking and jumping. His long red tail fanned the air. Still holding onto my pole, I tried to take a step backward. My feet wouldn't move. A cold, gripping fear came over me. I thought my legs were frozen. I made another effort to lift my leg. It moved. I realized that my feet were stuck in the soft, muddy bottom. I started backing out, dragging the body of my little dog. I couldn't feel the pole in my hands. When my feet touched the icy bank, I couldn't feel that either. All the feeling in my body was gone. I wrapped little Anne in my coat and hurried into my clothes. With the pole, I fished my light back. Close by was a large drift. I climbed up on top of it and dug a hole down through the ice and snow until I reached the dry limbs. I poured half of the oil in my lantern down into the hole and dropped in a match. In no time, I had a roaring fire. I laid little Anne close to the warm heat and went to work. Old Dan washed her head with his warm red tongue while I massaged and rubbed her body. I could tell by her cries when the blood started circulating. Little by little, her strength came back. I stood her on her feet and started walking her. She was weak and wobbly, but I knew she would live. I felt much better and breathed a sigh of relief. After drying myself out the best I could, I took the lantern handle from the pole, bent it back to its original position, and put it back on the lantern. Holding the light out in front of me, I looked at it. The bright metal gleamed in the firelight glow. I started talking to it. I said, "Thanks, old lantern, more than you'll ever know. I'll always take care of you. Your globe will always be clean, and there'll never be any rust or dirt on your frame." I knew if it had not been for the miracle of the lantern, my little dog would have met her death on that night. Her grave would have been the cold, icy waters of the Illinois River. Out in the river, I could hear the cold water gurgling in the icy trough. It seemed to be angry. It hissed and growled as it tore its way through the channel. I shuddered to think of what could have happened. Before I left for home, I walked back to the sycamore tree. Once again, I said a prayer. But this time the words were different. I didn't ask for a miracle. In every way a young boy could, I said thanks. My second prayer wasn't said with just words. All of my heart and soul was in it. On my way home, I decided not to say anything to my mother and father about little Anne's accident. I knew it would scare Mama, and she might stop my hunting. Reaching our house, I didn't hang the lantern in its usual place. I took it to my room and set it in a corner with the handle standing up. The next morning, I started sneezing and came down with a terrible cold. I told Mama I had gotten my feet wet. She scolded me a little and started doctoring me. For 3 days and nights, I stayed home. All this time, I kept checking the handle of the lantern. My sisters shook the house from the roof to the floor with their playing and romping, but the handle never did fall. I went to my mother and asked her if God answered prayers every time one was said. She smiled and said, "No, Billy, not every time. He only answers the ones that are said from the heart. You have to be sincere and believe in him." She wanted to know why I had asked. I said, "Oh, I just wondered and wanted to know." She came over and straightened my suspenders, saying, "That was a very nice question for my little Daniel Boone to ask." Bending over, she started kissing me. I finally squirmed away from her, feeling as wet as a dirt dauber's nest. My mother never could kiss me like a fella should be kissed. Before she was done, I was kissed all over. It always made me feel silly and baby-like. I tried to tell her that a coon hunter wasn't supposed to be kissed that way, but Mama never could understand things like that. I stomped out of the house to see how my dogs were. The fame of my dogs spread all over our part of the Ozarks. They were the best in the country. No coon hunter came into my grandfather's store with as many pelts as I did. Grandpa never overlooked an opportunity to brag. He told everyone the story of my dogs and the part he had played in getting them. Many was the time some farmer coming to our home would say, "Your grandpa was telling me you got 3 coons over in Peavine Hollow the other night." I would listen, knowing I only got one, or maybe none, but Grandpa was my pal. If he said I caught 10 in one tree, it was just that way. Because of my grandfather's bragging and his firm belief in my dogs and me, a terrible thing happened. One morning, while having breakfast, Mama said to Papa, "I'm almost out of cornmeal. Do you think you can go to the mill today?" Papa said, "I intended to butcher a hog. We're about out of meat." Looking at me, he said, "Shell a sack of corn, take one of the mules, and go to the mill for your mother." With the help of my sisters, we shelled the corn. Throwing it over our mule's back, I started for the store. On arriving at the mill house, I tied my mule to the hitching post, took my corn, and set it by the door. I walked over to the store and told Grandpa I wanted to get some corn ground. He said, "I'll be with you in just a minute." As I was waiting, I heard a horse coming. Looking out, I saw who it was, and didn't like what I saw. It was the 2 youngest Pritchard boys. I had run into them on several occasions during pie suppers and dances. The Pritchards were a large family that lived upriver about 5 miles. As in most small country communities, there is one family that no one likes. The Pritchards were it. Tales were told that they were bootleggers, thieves, and just all around no accounts. The story had gone round that old man Pritchard had killed a man somewhere in Missouri before moving to our part of the country. Reuben was 2 years older than I, big and husky for his age. He never had much to say. He had mean-looking eyes that were set far back in his rugged face. They were smoky-hued and unblinking, as if the eyelids were paralyzed. I had heard that once he had cut a boy with a knife in a fight over at the sawmill. Rainey was the youngest, about my age. He had the meanest disposition of any boy I had ever known. Because of this, he was disliked by young and old. Wherever Rainey went, trouble seemed to follow. He was always wanting to bet, and would bet on anything. He was nervous and could never seem to stand still. Once at my grandfather's store, I had given him a piece of candy. Snatching it out of my hand, he ate it and then sneered at me and said it wasn't any good. During a pie supper one night, he wanted to bet a dime that he could whip me. My mother told me always to be kind to Rainey, that he couldn't help being the way he was. I asked why. She said it was because his brothers were always picking on him and beating him. On entering the store, they stopped and glared at me. Reuben walked over to the counter. Rainey came over to me. Leering at me, he said, "I'd like to make a bet with you." I told him I didn't want to bet. He asked me if I was scared. "No, I just don't want to bet," I said. His neck and ears looked as though they hadn't been washed in months. His ferret-like eyes kept darting here and there. Glancing down to his hands, I saw the back of his right sleeve was stiff and starchy from the constant wiping of his nose. He saw I was looking him over and asked if I liked what I saw. I started to say no, but didn't. Turned and walked away a few steps. Reuben ordered some chewing tobacco.
"Aren't you a little young to be chewing?" Grandpa asked.
"Ain't for me, it's for my dad," Reuben growled.
Grandpa handed two plugs to him. He paid for it, turned around, and handed one plug to Rainey. Holding the other up in front of him, he looked it over. Looking at Grandpa, he gnawed at one corner of it. Grandpa mumbled something about how kids were brought up these days. He came from behind the counter, saying to me,
"Let's go grind that corn."
The Pritchard boys made no move to follow us out of the store.
"Come on," Grandpa said. "I'm going to lock up till I get this corn ground."
"We'll just stay here. I want to look at some of the shirts," said Reuben.
"No, you won't," said Grandpa. "Come on, I'm going to lock up."
Begrudgingly, they walked out. I helped Grandpa start the mill, and we proceeded to grind the corn. The Pritchard boys had followed us and were standing looking on. Rainey walked over to me.
"I hear you have some good hounds," he said.
I told him I had the best in the country. If he didn't believe me, he could just ask my grandfather. He just leered at me.
"I don't think they're half as good as you say they are," he said. "But our old blue tick hound can out-hunt both of them."
I laughed. "Ask Grandpa who brings in the most hides."
"I wouldn't believe him. He's crooked," he said.
I let him know right quick that my grandfather wasn't crooked.
"He's a storekeeper, ain't he?" he said.
I glanced over at Grandpa. He had heard the remark made by Rainey. His friendly old face was as red as a turkey gobbler's wattle. The last of my corn was just going through the grinding stones. Grandpa pushed a lever to one side, shutting off the power. He came over and said to Rainey,
"What do you do? Just go around looking for trouble? What do you want, a fight?"
Reuben sidled over.
"This ain't none of your business," he said. "Besides, Rainey's not looking for a fight. We just want to make a bet with him."
Grandpa glared at Reuben.
"Any bet you would make sure would be a good one, all right. What kind of a bet?"
Reuben spat a mouthful of tobacco juice on the clean floor. He said,
"Well, we've heard so much about them hounds of his, we just think it's a lot of talk and lies. We'd like to make a little bet. Say about $2.
I had never seen my old grandfather so mad. The red had left his face. In its place was a sickly, paste gray color. The kind old eyes behind the glasses burned with a fire I had never seen. In a loud voice, he asked,
"Bet on what?"
Reuben spat again. Grandpa's eyes followed the brown stain in its arch until it landed on the clean floor and splattered. With a leering grin on his ugly, dirty face, Reuben said,
"Well, we got an old coon up in our part of the country that's been there a long time. Ain't no dog yet ever been smart enough to tree him, and I..."
Rainey broke into the conversation.
"He ain't just an ordinary coon. He's an old-timer. Folks call him the ghost coon. Believe me, he is a ghost. He just runs hounds long enough to get them all warmed up, then climbs a tree and disappears. Our old blue hound has treed him more times than..."
Reuben told Rainey to shut up and let him do the talking. Looking over at me, he said,
"What do you say? Want to bet $2 your hounds can tree him?"
I looked at my grandfather, but he didn't help me. I told Reuben I didn't want to bet, but I was pretty sure my dogs could tree the ghost coon. Rainey butted in again.
What's the matter, you yeller?
I felt the hot blood rush into my face. My stomach felt like something alive was crawling in it. I doubled up my right fist and was on the point of hitting Rainey in one of his eyes when I felt my grandfather's hand on my shoulder. I looked up. His eyes flashed as he looked at me. A strange little smile was tugging at the corner of his mouth. The big artery in his neck was pounding out and in. It reminded me of a young bird that had fallen out of a nest and lay dying on the ground. Still looking at me, he reached back and took his billfold from his pocket, saying,
"Let's call that bet."
Turning to Reuben, he said,
"I'm going to let him call your bet, but now you listen. If you boys take him up there to hunt the ghost coon and jump on him and beat him up, you're sure going to hear from me. I don't mean maybe. I'll have both of you taken to Tahlequah and put in jail. You had better believe that."
Reuben saw he had pushed my grandfather far enough. Backing up a couple of steps, he said,
"We're not going to jump on him. All we want to do is make a bet."
Grandpa handed me two $1 bills, saying to Reuben,
"You hold your money, and he can hold his. If you lose, you had better pay off."
Looking back to me, he said,
"Son, if you lose, pay off."
I nodded my head. I asked Reuben when he wanted me to come up for the hunt. He thought a minute.
"Do you know where that old log slide comes out from the hills onto the road?" he asked.
I nodded.
"We'll meet you there tomorrow night, about dark," he said.
It was fine with me, I said, but I told him not to bring his hounds because mine wouldn't hunt with other dogs. He said he wouldn't. I agreed to bring my axe and lantern. As they turned to leave, Rainey smirked.
"Sucker,"
he said. I made no reply. After the Pritchard boys had gone, my grandfather looked at me and said,
"Son, I have never asked another man for much, but I sure want you to catch the ghost coon."
I told him if the ghost coon made one track in the river bottoms, my dogs would get him.
Grandpa laughed. "You better be getting home. It's getting late, and your mother's waiting for the cornmeal," he said.
I could hear him chuckling as he walked toward his store. I thought to myself, there goes the best grandpa a boy ever had. Lifting the sack of meal to the back of my old mule, I started for home. All the way I kept thinking of old Dan, little Ann, ghost coons, and the two ugly, dirty Pritchard boys. I decided not to tell my mother and father anything about the hunt, for I knew Mama wouldn't approve of anything I had to do with the Pritchards. The following evening, I arrived at the designated spot early. I sat down by a red oak tree to wait. I called little Ann over to me and had a good talk with her. I told her how much I loved her. I decided not to tell my mother and father anything about the hunt, for I knew Mama wouldn't approve of anything I had to do with the Pritchards. The following evening, I arrived at the designated spot early. I sat down by a red oak tree to wait. I called little Ann over to me and had a good talk with her. I told her how much I loved her, scratched her back, and looked at the pads of her feet. "Sweetheart," I said, "you must do something for me tonight. I want you to tree the ghost coon, for it means so much to Grandpa and me." She seemed to understand and answered by washing my face and hands. I tried to talk to old Dan, but I may as well have talked to a stump for all the attention he paid to me. He kept walking around, sniffing here and there. He couldn't understand why we were waiting. He was wanting to hunt. Reuben and Rainey showed up just at dark. Both had sneers on their faces.
"Are you ready?"
Reuben asked. "Yes," I said, and asked him which way was the best to go.
"Let's go down river a way and work up," he said. "We're sure to strike him coming up river, and that way we got the wind in our favor."
"Are these the hounds that we've been hearing so much about?"
Rainey asked. I nodded.
"They look too little to be any good," he said.
I told him dynamite came in little packages. He asked me if I had my $2. "Yes," I said. He wanted to see my money. I showed it to him. Reuben, not to be outdone, showed me his. We crossed an old field and entered the river bottoms. By this time it was quite dark. I lit my lantern and asked which one wanted to carry my axe.
"It's yours," Rainey said. "You carry it."
Not wanting to argue, I carried both the lantern and the axe. Rainey started telling me how stingy and crooked my grandfather was. I told him I hadn't come to have any trouble or to fight. All I wanted to do was hunt the ghost coon. If there was going to be any trouble, I would just call my dogs and go home. Reuben had a nickel's worth of sense, but Rainey had none at all. Reuben told him if he didn't shut up, he was going to bloody his nose. That shut Rainey up. Old Dan opened up first. It was a beautiful thing to hear. The deep tones of his voice rolled in the silent night. A bird in a canebrake on our right started chirping. A big swamp rabbit came running down the riverbank as if all hell was close to his heels. A bunch of mallards feeding in the shallows across the river took flight with frightened quacks. A feeling that only a hunter knows slowly crept over my body. I whooped to my dogs, urging them on. Little Ann came in. Her bell-like tones blended with old Dan's in perfect rhythm. We stood and listened to the beautiful music, the deep-throated notes of hunting hounds on the hot-scented trail of a river coon. Reuben said, "If he crosses the river up at the Buck Ford, it's the ghost coon, as that's the way he always runs." We stood and listened. Sure enough, the voices of my dogs were silent for a few minutes. Old Dan, a more powerful swimmer than Little Ann, was the first to open up after crossing over. She was close behind him. Reuben said, "That's him, all right. That's the ghost coon." They crossed the river again. We waited. Rainey said, "You may as well get your money out now." I told him just to wait a while, and I'd show him the ghost coon's hide. This brought a loud laugh from Rainey, which sounded like someone had dropped an empty bucket on a gravel bar and then had kicked it. The wily old coon crossed the river several times, but couldn't shake my dogs from his trail. He cut out from the bottoms, walked a rail fence, and jumped from it into a thick canebrake. He piled into an old slough. Where it emptied into the river, he swam to the middle. Doing opposite to what most coons do, which is swim downstream, he swam upstream. He stopped in an old drift in the middle of it. Little Ann found him. When she jumped him from the drift, old Dan was far downriver searching for the trail. If he could have gotten there in time, it would have been the last of the ghost coon, but little Ann couldn't do much by herself in the water. He fought his way free from her, swam to our side, and ran upstream. I could hear old Dan coming through the bottoms on the other side, bawling at every jump. I could feel the driving power in his voice. We heard him when he hit the water to cross over. It sounded like a cow had jumped in. Little Ann was warming up the ghost coon. I could tell by her voice that she was close to him. Reaching our side, old Dan tore out after her. He was a mad hound. His deep voice was telling her he was coming. We were trotting along, following my dogs, when I heard little Ann's bawling stop. "Wait a minute," I said. "I think she has treed him. Let's give her time to circle the tree to make sure he's there." Old Dan opened up bawling treed. Reuben started on.
"Something's wrong," I said. "I can't hear little Ann."
Rainey spoke up. "Maybe the ghost coon ate her up."
I glared at him.
Hurrying on, we came to my dogs. Old Dan was bawling at a hole in a large sycamore that had fallen into the river. At that spot, the bank was a good 10 feet above the water level. As the big tree had fallen, the roots had been torn and twisted from the ground. The jagged roots, acting as a drag, had stopped it from falling all the way into the stream. The trunk lay on a deep slant from the top of the bank to the water. Looking down, I could see the broken, tangled mass of the top. Debris from floods had caught in the limbs, forming a drift. Old Dan was trying to dig and gnaw his way into the log. Pulling him from the hole, I held my lantern up and looked down into the dark hollow. I knew that somewhere down below the surface, there had to be another hole in the trunk, as water had filled the hollow to the river level.
Reuben, looking over my shoulder, said, "That coon couldn't be in there. If he was, he'd be drowned."
I agreed.
Rainey spoke up.
"You ready to pay off?" he asked. "I told you them hounds couldn't tree the ghost coon."
I told him the show wasn't over.
Little Ann had never bawled treed, and I knew she wouldn't until she knew exactly where the coon was. Working the bank up and down, not finding the trail, she swam across the river and worked the other side. For a good half hour, she searched that side before she came back across to where old Dan was. She sniffed around the hollow log.
"We might as well get away from here," Rainey said. "They ain't going to find the ghost coon."
"It sure looks that way," Reuben said.
I told them I wasn't giving up until my dogs did.
"You just want to be stubborn," Reuben said. "I'm ready for my money now."
I asked him to wait a few minutes.
"Ain't no use," he said. "No hound yet ever treed that ghost coon."
Hearing a whine, I turned around. Little Anne had crawled up on the log and was inching her way down the slick trunk toward the water. I held my lantern up so I could see better. Spraddle-legged, claws digging into the bark, she was easing her way down.
"You better get her out of there," Reuben said. "If she gets down in that old treetop, she'll drown."
Reuben didn't know my little Anne. Once her feet slipped, I saw her hind quarters fall off to one side. She didn't get scared. Slowly, she eased her legs back up on the log. I made no reply. I just watched and waited. Little Anne eased herself into the water. Swimming to the drift, she started sniffing around. In places, it was thin and her legs would break through. Climbing, clawing, and swimming, she searched the drift over, looking for the lost trail. I saw when she stopped searching. With her body half in the water and her front feet curved over a piece of driftwood, she turned her head and looked toward the shore. I could see her head twisting from side to side. I could tell by her actions that she had gotten the scent. With a low whine, she started back. I told Reuben, "I think she smells something." Slowly and carefully, she worked her way through the tangled mass. I lost sight of her when she came close to the undermined bank. She wormed her way under the overhang. I could hear her clawing and wallowing around. And then all hell broke loose. Out from under the bank came the biggest coon I had ever seen, the ghost coon. He came out right over little Anne. She caught him in the old treetop. I knew she was no match for him in that tangled mass of limbs and logs. He fought his way free and swam for the opposite bank. She was right behind him. Old Dan didn't wait, look, or listen. He piled off the 10-foot bank and disappeared from sight. I looked for him. I knew he was tangled in the debris under the surface. I started to take off my overalls, but stopped when I saw his red head shoot up out of the water. Bawling and clawing his way free of the limbs and logs, he was on his way. On reaching midstream, the ghost coon headed downriver with little Anne still on his trail. We ran down the riverbank. I could see my dogs clearly in the moonlight. The ghost coon was about 15 feet ahead of little Anne. About 25 yards behind them came old Dan, trying so hard to catch up. I whooped to them. Reuben grabbed a pole, saying, "He may come out on this side." Knowing the ghost coon was desperate, I wondered what he would do. Reaching a gravel bar below the high bank, we ran out on it to the water's edge. Then the ghost coon did something that I never expected. Coming even with us, he turned from midstream and came straight for us. I heard Reuben yell, "Here he comes!" He churned his way through the shallows and ran right between us. Reuben swung his pole, missed the coon, and almost hit little Anne. The coon headed for the river bottoms with her right on his heels. The bawling of little Anne and our screaming and hollering made so much noise I didn't hear old Dan coming. He tore out of the river, plowed into me, and knocked me down. We ran through the bottoms, following my dogs. I thought the ghost coon was going back to the sycamore log, but he didn't. He ran upriver. While hurrying after them, I looked over at Rainey. For once in his life, I think he was excited. He was whooping and screaming and falling over logs and limbs. I felt good all over. Glancing over at me, Rainey said, "They ain't got him yet." The ghost coon crossed the river time after time. Seeing that he couldn't shake old Dan and little Anne from his trail, he cut through the river bottoms and ran out into an old field. At this maneuver, Reuben said to Rainey, "He's heading for that tree."
"What tree?" I asked.
"You'll see," Rainey said. "When he gets tired, he always heads for that tree. That's where he gets his name, the ghost coon. He just disappears."
"If he disappears, my dogs will disappear with them," I said.
Rainey laughed.
I had to admit one thing. The Pritchard boys knew the habits of the ghost coon. I knew he couldn't run all night. He had already far surpassed any coon I had ever chased.
"They're just about there," Reuben said.
Just then I heard old Dan bark treed. I waited for little Anne's voice. I didn't hear her. I wondered what it could be this time.
"He's there, all right," Reuben said. "He's in that tree."
"Well, come on," I said. "I want to see that tree."
"You might as well get your money out," Rainey said.
I told him he had said that once before, back on the riverbank. Coming up to the tree, I could see it was a huge bur oak. It wasn't tall, it was just the opposite, rather low and squatty. The top was a thick mass of large limbs, and it hadn't shed all of its leaves yet. It stood by itself in an old field. There were no other trees within 50 yards of it. About 15 feet to the left were the remains of a barbed wire fence, an old gate hung by one rusty hinge from a large corner post. I could tell that at one time a house had stood close by. Reuben saw me looking around.
"A long time ago some Indians lived here and farmed these fields," he said.
I walked around the tree looking for the coon, but could see very little in the dark shadows.
"Ain't no use to look," Reuben said. "He won't be there."
Rainey spoke up.
"This ain't the first time we've been to this tree," he said.
Reuben told Rainey to shut up.
"You talk too much," he said.
In a whining voice, Rainey said, "Reuben, you know the coon ain't in that tree. Make him pay off him. Let's go home. I'm getting tired."
I told Reuben I was going to climb the tree.
"Go ahead," he said. "It won't do you any good."
The tree was easy to climb. I looked all over it, on each limb and in every dark place. I looked for a hollow. The ghost coon wasn't there. I climbed back down, scolded old Dan to stop his loud bawling, and looked for little Ann. I saw her far up the old fence row, sniffing and running here and there. I knew the ghost coon had pulled a real trick, but I couldn't figure out what it was. Little Ann had never yet barked treed. I knew if the coon was in the tree, she wouldn't still be searching for a trail. Old Dan started working again. My dogs covered the field. They circled and circled. They ran up and down the barbed wire fence on both sides. I knew the coon hadn't walked the barbed wire, ghost or no ghost. He couldn't do that. I walked over to the old gate and looked around. I sat down and stared up into the tree. Little Ann came to me. Old Dan, giving up his search, came back to the tree and bawled a couple of times. I scolded him again. Reuben came over, leering at me. He said,
"You give up?"
I didn't answer. Little Ann once again started searching for the lost trail. Old Dan went to help her.
Rainey said, "I told you that you couldn't tree the ghost coon. Why don't you pay off so we can go home?"
I told him I hadn't given up. My dogs were still hunting. When they gave up, I would too.
Reuben said, "Well, we're not going to stay here all night."
Looking back to the tree, I thought perhaps I had overlooked something. I told Reuben I was going to climb it again. He laughed.
"Go ahead. Won't do any good. You climbed it once. Ain't you satisfied?"
"No, I'm not satisfied," I said. "I just don't believe in ghost coons."
Reuben said, "I don't believe in ghosts either, but facts are facts. To tell you the truth, I've climbed that tree a dozen times, and there just ain't no place in it for a coon to hide."
Rainey spoke up.
"Our old blue hound has treed the ghost coon in this tree more times than one. Maybe you two don't believe in ghosts, but I do. Why don't you pay off so we can get away from here?"
"I'll climb it one more time," I said. "If I can't find him, I'll pay off." Climbing up again, I searched and searched. When I got through, I knew the ghost coon wasn't in that tree. When I came down, I saw my dogs had given up. That took the last resistance out of me. I knew if they couldn't find the ghost coon, I couldn't. Digging the $2 $1 bills out of my pocket, I walked over to Reuben. Little Ann was by my side. I handed my money over, saying, "Well, you won it fair and square." With a grin on his face, Reuben took my money. He said,
"I bet this'll break your old grandpa's heart."
I didn't reply. Reaching down, I caught Little Ann's head in my hands. Looking into her warm, friendly eyes, I said, "It's all right, little girl. We haven't given up yet. We'll come back. We may never catch the ghost coon, but we'll run him until he leaves the country." She licked my hands and whined. A small breeze began to stir. Glancing up into the tree, I saw some leaves shaking. I said to Reuben, "Looks like the wind is coming up. It may blow up a storm. We'd better be heading for home." Just as I turned, I saw Little Ann throw up her head and whine. Her body grew stiff and taut. I watched her. She was testing the wind. I knew she had scented something in the breeze. Stiff-legged, head high in the air, she started walking toward the tree. Almost there, she turned back and stopped. I knew she had caught the scent, but could only catch it when the breeze came. Looking at Reuben, I said, "I haven't lost that $2 yet." Another breeze drifted out of the river bottoms. Little Ann caught the scent again. Slowly, she walked straight to the large gatepost, reared up on it with her front feet, and bawled the most beautiful tree bark I ever heard in my life. Old Dan, not understanding why Little Ann was bawling, stood and looked. He walked over to the post, reared up on it, and sniffed.
Then, raising his head, he shook the dead leaves in the bur oak tree with his deep voice. I looked at Rainey. Laughing, I said, "There's your ghost, Coon. Now what do you think of my dogs?" For once, he made no reply. Going over to the post, I saw it was a large black locust put there many years ago to hang the gate. Looking up at the tree, I saw how the ghost coon had pulled his trick. One large, long limb ran out and hung directly over the gate. It was a drop of a good 12 feet from the branch to the top of the gatepost, but I knew we weren't after an ordinary coon. This was the ghost coon. I said to Reuben, "Boost me up, and I'll see if the post is hollow." After breaking off a long jimson weed to use as a prod, I got up on Reuben's shoulder, and he raised me up. The post was hollow. Not knowing how far down the hole went, I started the switch down. About halfway, I felt something soft. I gave it a hard jab. I heard him coming. He boiled out right in my face. I let go of everything. Hitting the ground, I rolled over on my back and looked up. For a split second, the ghost coon stayed on top of the post, and then he jumped. My dogs were on him the instant he hit the ground. The fight was on. I knew the coon didn't have a chance, as he wasn't in the waters of the river. He didn't give up easily, even though he was on dry land. He was fighting for his life, and a good account he gave. He fought his way to freedom and made it back to the bur oak tree. He was a good 6 feet up the side when old Dan, leaping high in the air, caught him and pulled him back down. At the foot of the tree, the fight went on. Again, the ghost coon fought his way free. This time, he made it and disappeared in the dark shadows of the tree. Old Dan was furious. Never before had I seen a coon get away from him. I told Reuben I would climb up and run him out. As I started climbing, I saw Little Ann go to one side and Old Dan to the other. My dogs would never stay together when they had treed a coon, so that any way he left a tree, he was met by one of them. About halfway up, far out on a limb, I found the ghost coon. As I started toward him, my dog stopped bawling. I heard something I had heard many times. The sound was like the cry of a small baby. It was the cry of a ringtail coon when he knows it is the end of the trail. I never liked to hear this cry, but it was all in the game, the hunter and the hunted. As I sat there on the limb, looking at the old fella, he cried again. Something came over me. I didn't want to kill him. I hollered down and told Reuben I didn't want to kill the ghost coon. He hollered back, "Are you crazy?" I told him I wasn't crazy, I just didn't want to kill him. I climbed down. Reuben was mad. He said, "What's the matter with you?" "Nothing," I told him. "I just don't have the heart to kill the coon." I told him there were plenty more. Why kill him? He had lived here a long time, and more than one hunter had listened to the voices of his hounds bawling on his trail. Rainey said, "He's chicken liver, that's what it is." I didn't like that, but not wanting to argue, I didn't say anything. Reuben said, "I'll go up and run him out." "I won't let my dogs kill him," I said. Reuben glared at me. "I'm going up and run that coon out," he said. "If you stop your dogs, I'm going to beat you half to death." "Do it anyway, Reuben," Rainey said. "I've a good mind to," said Reuben. Just as Reuben started to climb the tree, old Dan growled. He was staring into the darkness. Something was coming. "What's that?" I asked. "I don't know," Reuben said. "Don't sound like anything I ever heard." "It's ghosts," Rainey said. "Let's get away from here." An animal was coming out of the darkness. It was walking slowly in an odd way, as if it were walking sideways. The hair on the back of my neck stood straight out. As the animal came closer, Rainey said, "Why, it's old Blue. How did he get loose?" It was a big blue tick hound. Around his neck was a piece of rope about 3 feet long. One could see that the rope had been gnawed in two. The frayed end had become entangled in a fair-sized dead limb. Dragging the limb was what made the dog look so odd. I felt much better when I found out what it was. The blue tick hound was like the Pritchards, mean and ugly. He was a big dog, tall and heavy. His chest was thick and solid. He came up growling. The hair on his back was standing straight up. He walked stiff-legged around old Dan and showing his teeth. I told Rainey he had better get hold of his dog or there was sure to be a fight. "You better get hold of your dog," he said. "I'm not worried about old Blue. He can take care of himself." I said no more. "Don't make no difference now whether you kill a ghost coon or not," Reuben said. "Old Blue'll take care of him." I knew the killing of the coon was out of my control, but I didn't want to see him die. I said to Reuben, "Just give back my $2 and I'll go home.
I can't keep you from killing him, but I don't have to stay and see it.
Reuben, don't give him the money, Rainey said. He ain't killed the ghost coon. That's right, Reuben said. You ain't, and I wouldn't let you now, even if you wanted to.
I told them my dogs had treed the ghost coon, and that was the bet, to tree the ghost coon.
No, it wasn't, Reuben said. You said you would kill him.
It was no such thing, I said. I done all I said I would.
Reuben walked up in